It's a personal pleasure to be able to give this type of shiur. I can tell you that I don't know if in history we ever experienced the type of galus of chesed that we do now. We recognize that it affords us tremendous opportunities, but there also are significant challenges that we face in the workplace. And it's not only important that you know la halacha, how to navigate and how to be able to sustain yourself in the workplace, but it very much speaks to the mission statement of our yeshiva. Dr. Salk and I always mention in Eretz Yisrael the fact that integration is something that's absolutely critical. And to be able to see to it that the Torah Hashem that learned in the yeshiva is something that you can echo and practice in the workplace, that is something that is absolutely critical. So let me begin with the following mashal that I often mention. You know, imagine, for example, that you're watching an Olympic sprint, you know, a male Olympic sprint. You're watching this this race, and all of a sudden you see a person crosses the finish line first, and they win. They should receive the gold medal. And all of a sudden you're told, no, that this isn't the medal round. This is just a qualifying round. Like all of this effort just to be able to position yourself, you know, in the ultimate ability to reach that particular goal. No, you have to go ahead and race and you have to run because it really makes a difference. Whether you're going to be in lane 4, lane 5, lane 1, or lane 8, that makes a huge difference in terms of that sense of competition. I'll tell you that all of the hishtaglus that one invests in Parnassa simply is in terms of positioning yourself. Ultimately, everything is determined by Kadosh Baruch Hu. And everything that you do simply is to see to it that you act responsibly and you're mishtadal appropriately. That's what the Chazon Ish writes in Emunah and Bitachon and Perek Beis, that everything is Biyad Hashem, that's our Emunah and Bitachon, but a Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't expect we sit back and do nothing. A person has to work. You have to exert effort simply to avail yourself to that particular bracha. And therefore you have to realize that hishtadlus has to be appropriate, effective, responsible hishtadlus. It's a theme of last Shabbos and this Shabbos is Kriyas HaTorah. Hishtadlus of Yosef HaTzadik. Was that appropriate? Was it not appropriate? If it wasn't exactly, what did he do that was wrong? Is anything expected of us in terms of making those seemingly necessary efforts in order to be able to succeed? But I'll tell you one thing is clear. If you really believe, everything is Biyad Hashem. And that which you're doing is just simply appropriate hishtadlus. It would be foolish in order to do so inappropriately. I'll tell you that if a person is going to work on Shabbos, he's not going to be matzliach, because all of this is Biyad Hashem. And it's not limited to Shabbos. You have to navigate all of the issues of Yoredei and Chosh and Mishpat, issues of Yichud and issues of Negi and issues of integrity and issues of Marisayim. If you're not going to navigate that properly, it's going to be a false start. You're going to be disqualified. And even if maybe in the short term there might be a gain, I can assure you that ultimately that will not be the case. We're asked to be mishtadel, and to be mishtadel in the most appropriate way, and that means to be able to do so with honesty, with integrity, and loyalty to every aspect of halacha. It's so important, a sense of asei lecha rav. You have to be able to have a rav, you have to have a rebbe that you can access, or you can ask, to be able to help you navigate some of the difficult decisions that you're going to make. Time is short, so let's just start with, I will tell you, in Yanei Diyama. The Gemara in Shabbos and Daf Chav Gimel discusses the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah, and the Gemara describes a person that has multiple doors to his home. So Mikar Hadin, all that is necessary is to place the Ner Chanukah at one Pesach, but the Gemara says that's not enough. A person is obligated to place the Ner Chanukah outside in each and every door, each and every door. What is the fear? A person will see my house, he'll see one door, there's no Ner Chanukah that's there, and that will lead to the problem, of course, of Chshav, the problem of Marisayim. He will walk away thinking that I did not go ahead and fulfill the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah. So because of his misconception, I am obligated to light a Ner Chanukah at each and every door. You know, one could really argue, like, who cares? No, why do I have to be concerned that he will get it right and that he will recognize what I'm doing? So there is a Mishnah in Shkolim, Beragil, Mishnah Beis, that tells us, because it's clear from Chumash, that is true, V'yisim Nikim, Me Hashem Yisrael, the Pasuk in Midbar Lamed Beis. It's not enough to be Naki in the eyes of Hashem, but you have to see to it that the perception, Bidi Adam, is considered to be that which is absolutely critical as well. And this is, of course, what we refer to as Maris Ayin, as Maris Ayin. Rav Soloveitchik once explained that what exactly is driving the Isser of Maris Ayin? Why is that considered to be so compelling? So the Rav suggested that there are two different halves, two opposing halves, opposite halves to Maris Ayin. The person sees me doing something, and it has a perception that it's wrong. What exactly am I afraid of? A person can respond in one of two ways. One way is the person will be down the kafsos. He'll listen, what I'm doing is 100% good, it's legit. And you know what he's going to do? He's going to copy me. He's going to do exactly that which I did. Exactly that which I did. But you know what? I did it a little differently, but it wasn't so noticeable. He's going to do it inappropriately. In other words, part of the Isser of Maris Ayin is Lifnei Iver lo sitei michshol, because the person will assume what I'm doing is absolutely appropriate. This is what Rashi writes. Rashi's found a couple places in Shas, Rashi in Chulin and Daf Mem Aleph and Krisus and Daf Chaf Aleph. Rashi writes, the concern of Maris Ayin is that Omra Mutter, a person's going to think you're allowed to do it, and he will go ahead and do so without realizing my kudus, that I did it in this particular way. What about the Ner Chanukah case? That's Omra Mutter. A person goes ahead and sees my doorway, and there's no menorah there. So he's going to reason that there's no mitzvah of menorah? No, that's the opposite, no? A person is going to be choshe, b'ksherim, that I didn't fulfill the mitzvah of hadlakas aneros. Do you have to be so cared about that? Absolutely, yes. A person has to be concerned with his reputation as well. Rav Soloveitchik said that's an isser of lashon hara. He thought it was obvious that a person cannot speak or position himself in a way that it will look unfavorably regarding you yourself, not about others, but about yourself. And that, he thought, was part of the isser of Maris Ayin. So there are two halves, no? That's shad in the Gemara. A person will assume I'm doing that which is wrong, and therefore he will be choshed, that I violated an isser, didn't fulfill a mitzvah. The flip side is a person can assume what I'm doing is right, and he will mimic, he will copy that what I'm doing. In other words, the concept of Maris Ayin is at once an isser of Lifnei Iver, and also an isser of Lashon Hara. Now that was like the Rav's Hagdara. Two different halves that one finds to that particular case. Maris Ayin is very, very common when it comes to the daily routine. Very, very often, for example, interviewing, very often in the business world, you'll be asked to frequent restaurants, to go to business meetings, non-kosher establishments. Is that a problem of Maris Ayin? If it is, how indeed do you combat that? How do you solve this? Just in terms of certain Mekoros, there is a comment of the Pri Chadosh. Pri Chadosh is found a couple of places in Shulchan Aruch. It's found in Aruch Chaim, Tav Samach Aleph. It's found in Yeradei and Simen Pei Zayin, where the Pri Chadosh writes a Chiddush that we don't paskin like, that Maris Ayin is limited to the examples that you find in the Gemara. That's the scope of Maris Ayin. So Ner Chanukah is an example. Sugin Beitz and Daf Tes, that you can't take your wet garment on Shabbos and put it on the laundry line because it's Maris Ayin that you laundered it on Shabbos. You can't go ahead and move an industrial ladder on Shabbos and Yantif because lahatiyat gago hutzarech, it looks like you're making household repairs. But the Pri Chadosh writes a great chiddush that it's limited to those particular cases. We don't paskin like that view of the Pri Chadosh. We assume those are models. But whenever there is that inappropriate perception, that is considered to be a concern. The Rama in Yeradei and Simen Pei Zayin writes a further issue. The Rama is discussing a person who's eating chicken and he has what looks like milk, but it's almond milk, it's chalav shkedim, it's not milk, which is milchix. How necessary is it to place the shkedim right there with the food? That if anybody sees, will obviously see that this is parv, this is not considered to be milchix. The Rama writes a further distinction, and that is maybe Maris Ayin only applies to an Issa Daraisa, not to an Issa Darabanan. And therefore, chicken and milk is only an Issa Darabanan, and therefore, maybe one doesn't have to be concerned with Maris Ayin. The Shach writes, we shouldn't paskin like that Rama. We should be careful about issues of Maris Ayin, even when it comes to Issure Darabanan as well. So there is a kula of Pri Chadosh, a kula of the Rama. Those we try typically not to rely on. But there is a comment of the Rush. The Rush is found in the very end of Maseches Nida, that there's a chibra of the Rush which is called Hilchos Kilai Begodim. In Hilchos Klai V'Gadim, in Simin Zayin, the Rosh discusses the following. There's a Mishnah in Perites of Kilayim. The Mishnah in Kilayim tells us the following, that you can't go ahead and have a garment which is made up of wool and silk. Because even though wool and silk certainly is not considered to be shatnez, no shape or form, but nonetheless, it has the appearance of. Now, when I look at that garment, it's clear to me that's not all wool. It's clear that there are other fibers that are there, and therefore it's marisayin of linen, and therefore a mishnah, perites, a mishnah beis, and meseches klein, that you can have the combination of wool and silk. So the Rosh writes the following. This Rosh is quoted in Shulchan Aruch, in Yerodeya, in Kuf Tzariches, that was true then, but the perception now is very, very different. That's a stunning Rosh. Medina de Mishnah, that's marisayin. That's because silk was not at all common. But for us, silk is very, very common. And therefore, for us to mix these fibers together, who would think that is shatnez? And therefore, the Rosh writes that perception may have been true, but it is no longer true. That's an important comment of the Rosh. The subjective quality to the Isser of Marisayim, what was true in earlier times, is not necessarily true today. The reason I think this is so relevant, Rav Moshe has a tshuva about Marisayim, about dining in a non-kosher restaurant. It's found in Aruch Chaim, in Chelek Beis and Simen Mem, where Rav Moshe is somewhat machmir in this regard. He writes that positioning yourself, right, in a non-kosher establishment should be a problem of Marisayim. And the way that you have to avoid it is, number one, it has to be justified by an extreme need. And number two, he writes, is that there was no alternative venue. Number three, Rav Moshe writes, is that you have to covertly go into the restaurant. No one else should see you. And number four, he writes, if anybody else sees you, before you go into the restaurant, you have to go over to them and tell them that I'm only going to this restaurant because I have a business meeting. And that's why I'm there, but I'm not going there for the purpose of achila. Rav Moshe writes four different conditions in order to go ahead and do so. The Hara would simply just add as follows, that Shuvah of Rav Moshe was written in the 1950s. Recently, right, Rav Asher Weiss, we have a close relationship, so we've been encouraging each other to be Marbitz Torah through Ksivas HaSvarim. We have an ongoing joke about who published more. So, the last time we were together was last month, so it's pretty close. It's pretty close. But recently he started printing his tshuvas. So in Chelek Aleph and Simon Samach Zayin, there Rav Asher Weiss assumes that certainly the reality today has changed. Certainly it has changed. It is commonplace to have certain types of meetings in a non-kosher restaurant, and therefore he is much more lenient regarding concerns of marisayim. He writes this in two cases. One case he mentions is an office cafeteria, where he suggests an office cafeteria is like a food court that you have in a mall, and therefore it is clear that people will just sit and eat there, bringing their own things, not necessarily purchasing from those restaurants. And even if you purchase from a cafeteria, there are so many things that are there that are pre-wrapped, with a hashkacha, and fruit, whole fruits, and so on, that in the office cafeteria setting, if that clearly is the case, he writes explicitly, did not feel that was an issue of marisayin to be able to sit there, because the perception simply is that you're using it to eat, not necessarily buying, and certainly not buying non-kosher food. And he writes, the same thing is true when it comes to typical business meetings in today's society. Commonly, they are found in restaurants, and therefore, to go into a non-kosher restaurant for the purpose of, right, that alone is not considered to be an iser of marisayin. I would tell you that one should, obviously, as he writes in the tshuva, if you have options, you're in a metropolitan area where you have a say in where it takes place, obviously, scheduled in the kosher restaurant, but if it's something that you cannot control, so therefore he does not feel that the typical business setting, right, in a non-kosher restaurant would be an issue of marisayin. That being said, I would tell you the following. I usually recommend to my balabatim this. Let it clearly be the perception that it's a business meeting. You know, sometimes you can spot businessmen, blocks away. You know, by the way they dress, right, by the briefcase that they carry. right? Al tamei balabatim, that wear your business suit. Don't dress down. Don't casually go into the restaurant, even if it's on a Friday, where the tendency today is to dress down. In such a case, make it clear that this is business attire. Right? Go in with your briefcase and so on, that it's clear to everyone. You don't take your briefcase to a restaurant, but it's clear that that, in fact, is being done. And I would very, very much limit what you eat in that particular setting. Right? The cold drink, I tell my balabatim that they could have. If there is a whole fruit, non-cut fruit, if necessary, because to sit there for a couple hours, not have anything at all, not that you're just hungry, that perception, hey, get some cherries, get some grapes, you know, if you can get a whole fruit, that in fact would be fine. What I discourage them from doing is allowing the business, the corporation, to make alternative arrangements, to offer for you and to get kosher food brought into the non-kosher establishment. The reason I discourage that is for a couple of reasons. Number one, I think it intensifies the issue of the marisayim, because of the bystander, you're really sitting there eating a full meal, as opposed to clearly just sitting there in a more passive way. Number two, I can tell you, I would say 7 or 8 out of 10 times, something's going to go wrong. Something's going to go wrong. Now, the meal will be delivered, the seal's going to be broken, the kalim are not going to be the way they promised them, or all of a sudden you'll see that something was added to. In the meantime, someone in this corporation has spent funds and significant time making all these alternative arrangements for you. You know, I'll get a call from the restaurant, from one of my balabatim, what do I do now? No choice, to thumb. You can't eat, no? So the CEO is sitting there, right, after spending all this time and effort accommodating him, and the food was not touched. That's far, far worse. I wouldn't risk that, and it's not a chashash rachok. Now, this happens constantly, no? Because it's normal. The waiter is there to serve you. So to bring things that are double wrapped without enhancing it in any shape or form, and you have this ugly presentation, they're going to do something in many, many of the cases. I would strongly recommend that in fact is not done in any shape or form. And sometimes you have to know the venue. You're traveling on the turnpike and you go in and you get a Coke. That I don't think is a problem of marisayim. You're thirsty in Manhattan, and you go into a non-kosher restaurant to get a Coke, that I would tell you is a much more significant issue of marisayim. You have to know sometimes the setting. It's probably obvious to someone when you're driving on the turnpike that you are not going to sit down and have a meal, even if you're waiting in line at an establishment that sells things that are not kosher. But those are the broader guidelines that I would give you, and obviously, b'chadchila, you live in a metropolitan area, whatever you could do to position yourself in a kosher restaurant, that I would tell you is the most appropriate thing. There's a separate issue, what you find in the Gemara of Adazara, daf lamed aleph from a beis, and that is drinking. Forget about wine issues of yayin esek and stam yayin, just simply any form of sheicha, no? Any alcoholic beverage, any intoxicating drink, that will tell you out of the question. Mefurish in the Gemara, Lamed Aleph Mabez, that is us. You cannot go out to a public venue with non-Jews and drink with them. Even if everything has the finest hashgacha. It's found in your Adayin Kufyud Beis, in your Adayin Kufyud Dalet. Drinking with them is something which is out of the question. No alcoholic beverages whatsoever. Aside from the fact that it's aser, if you will ask a seasoned rav and a seasoned posek, did you ever have such an unfortunate, tragic shayla? They will very likely tell you that yes. From people, from men, from women who went to a business setting, whether it's a party, whether it's a restaurant, drank a little bit too much, and all of a sudden did things that were catastrophic. Now, the repercussions can be unbelievably severe. Now, you're going to drink, you're going to lose your sense. If you can't drive, recognize that beyond that, you can't go ahead and conduct yourself in an appropriate way of Kiddush Hashem. There was a known case just several years ago of a frum woman, very, very makbet on sneers. She went to a party because a colleague was retiring. She took a drink, and she got somewhat intoxicated. Unfortunately, what followed? She was taken advantage of, as rather than a situation. She was married to a Kohen. So in such a case, the Gdolei Rabbanim Paskin, she had to get divorced, and it's a tragedy for her husband, tragedy for children. You know, we think sometimes that these things never happen. I can tell you, they absolutely happen. You look in the Sefer HaChinuch and Kuf Peches, the Sefer HaChinuch writes that Harbe Amru came. There are many that reasoned it'll never happen to me. And the Sefer HaChinuch writes, V'nichshul. And the result was catastrophic. He writes that in Harchakos of Arayos, in cases of Yichud, right? You have to recognize the brilliance of Chazal in all of their gzeros. They knew exactly what could possibly lead to what and the difficulty. It's interesting when you look in Shulchanach, you look there in that simin, Kuf Yedalin, and Kuf Yedbeis, there is a Pri Chodosh that discusses the following. Now, you know, years ago you see the Pri Chodosh, it seems somewhat unusual, but today it's very, very clear. What about going out for coffee? That's the Pri Chodosh. Is that part of that gzeirin of Arizar and Av, Laban Aleph Mabez? You know, when we were growing up, you would drink coffee. Now, today, you don't drink coffee. No, you do coffee. No, that's a different mindset. No, it's an experience. No, you go to some, let's do coffee. You're getting together for a social interaction, a social experience. The Pri Chodesh writes, technically, that's not part of the gzeira, where the Gemara says drinking together with non-Jews, but the Birka Yosef disagrees. There's a Birka Yosef, the Chidar, and Chaim, and Simen Shin Chafei, that writes that getting together in that sense of like a Starbucks and having coffee together in a social environment is part of that Gzeira of the Gemara of Avodah Zarah and Av, Lal Alef Mudbeis. A very important, an important Chiddush. Now, it resonates. Now, there are poskim that write that even if technically it's not, but the message of the Birka Yosef is clear, and that is that, you know, sometimes you do what you have to do in terms of a professional environment and meeting. But today, it's very easy to blur the line between a professional formal meeting and informal socializing. And very often, just sitting and shooting the breeze and so on, right, that's something that the Shelas Yavitz writes. One has to be constantly, constantly on guard and be very, very careful about. One of the issues that Rav Moshe discusses several different shuvas, right? The most recent shuva is in Chelek Dalev Arachayim, in Simen Beis, is the need to wear a yarmulke, right? At work. There is the known sheet of the Taz. It's found in Arachayim and Simen Ches. Really, it's found in Rishonim. This is already a shuvas, Maribuna, right? In Simen Lamed Dalet, where the Maribuna writes that going with your head uncovered is an isra chukasakum, chukosem lo sedeichum, an isra daris. Even though yarmulke only started as a minhag that you find in the Gemara, that one should see to it that the Rosh is mechusah, but nonetheless today, it's a sign of identity. Now, a person who will take off his yarmulke, it's because he wants to conceal the fact that he is. So the Taz writes already in his time, there's a dimension to yarmulke that was not necessarily true in the time of Chazal. And that was an Isser of Chukas Akum. If you really hold this is true, this is part of V'chukoseyim lo seleichu, alav daraisa, the kulas of not wearing yarmulke would be very, very limited. Because for alav daraisa, yerodea kufnun zayin, you have to be willing to give up kohon besa. No? You have to be able to forfeit your parnasa in order to go ahead and do that. Mi'ikar hadin, we don't assume. Like the Taz, we don't assume like the Maribuna, we assume that this is an appropriate practice, obviously to go ahead and to wear, but taking it off would not be an Issa Daraisa, would not be under the framework of Chukasako. That being said, Rav Moshe writes the following, that obviously you have to know the environment well. What was true again years ago is not necessarily true now. There are companies that you know and many firms that never hired a Jew, that now have mincha minyanim, right, that are there, and there are many who work there who proudly wear their yarmulke. It's very important that you get a very accurate read on the environment and ask a shayla, ask her of, in terms of whether it's appropriate to take off my yarmulke in that particular case. Rav Moshe writes in that tshuva, in Chelek Dalet, Simen Beis, even if one feels it's absolutely necessary, he writes, it's only limited to the workplace. It would not allow you to go to work without a yarmulke, leave work without a yarmulke. the way Rav Moshe describes it is the moment you leave the building, you put your yarmulke, because when you leave the building, they no longer have that dominion over you that they can insist. It's not appropriate for our client base that you wear a yarmulke. Rav Moshe writes, there should be a significant loss if it's as a result of wearing the yarmulke, not just simply that, you know, maybe you'll get an occasional look, but rather there's a risk of losing the parnasa. But I will tell you that in today's day and age, it's not what it used to be. It's not what it used to be. There are times that a person proudly can go and do so. The vast majority of our cases, the vast majority of my balabatim find that in all walks of life, they're able to wear their yarmulke. If you look in our Chaim in Siman Reish Vav, the Mechaber writes that aside from wearing the yarmulke generally, the Mechaber writes that Rosh HaMagula Asur Levarich. Rosh HaMagula Asur Levarich. He can't make a bracha, the Gilui Rosh. And the Mishnah Berurah writes, you can't be Mazkir Shem Shamayim, the Gilui Rosh. So even if one has that heter, for example, that maybe in the work environment they're not going to go ahead and do so, but that doesn't necessarily apply B'Shas Bracha. When a person, for example, is making a bracha before he eats, or when a person is making a bracha of Asher Yatzah. So in such a case, a person has to position himself, because the heter that Rav Moshe writes of going B'Gilui Rosh, right, does not necessarily extend to cases that indeed are B'Shas Bracha. There is a Bach. Sometimes you see it commonly done, the Bach and Siman Ayin Dalet. We laugh at this sometimes a little bit, but it's a Bach and Siman Ayin Dalet that if you cover your head with a sleeve, not with your bare arm, but you cover your head with a sleeve, that already would qualify as your head being covered. If a person is not wearing yarmulke and it's just a question of what to do, b'shas bracha, sometimes that can be a fallback position as a possible etzah. Earlier in the year, when Dr. Kadosh was here, he gave a shiur on the concept of Gnevas Das. Here, Rav Moshe, in that very tshuva, it's worth taking a look. Now, Arachayim Chelek Dalet Simen Beis, what about not wearing a yarmulke for the interview? Knowing that once you land the position, now you can go ahead and do so. So, Rav Moshe assumes clearly in the tshuva, doesn't explain at length, that it's not a problem of Gnevas Das. You are not misleading the corporation if you show up for the interview bareheaded if you're told that you're wearing yarmulke will absolutely disqualify you, even if you plan to wear yarmulke during that particular time. It's an interesting tshuva. Rav Moshe doesn't explain the underpinnings of why exactly that is the case, but you know that officially they cannot dismiss you, they cannot reject you because you're wearing a yarmulke. Right? That right is protected. What you're afraid of course, is the following. No, they're going to reject you for all different other reasons, but under, you know, the false pretense. But really the reason they're doing so is for that reason. But what they're doing, if the yarmulke is playing a role in terms of their decision not to accept you, so therefore that is considered to be, right, running in the face of your religious right to go ahead and do so. The fear is they'll say you didn't interview well. There's so many intangibles. No, you didn't articulate properly. You didn't converse in a proper way. You weren't necessarily the image that indeed that they're looking for, without mentioning anything to do with the religious manifestation of the yarmulke itself. Probably because of those considerations, Rav Moshe said that therefore, if that is the fear, it's not considered to be an act of Gnevas Das. I would urge again that if this is nogeya, you have to do a lot of homework and you have to really ask appropriate shailas. You know, you're not inventing the wheel. You know, there are people that have done this. They have been in the same situations as you are. I'd get good eights and a good psak in terms of how I should present myself, how forthright I should be if questions are being asked to me that are of religious observance in nature, that are not necessarily fully relevant for the job itself, but rather right, the broader question of whether indeed you will be hired. One of the challenges that you often find in social environments, in working environments, is handshake. Now, very often you're in a situation where a person will stick out their hand, and the question is how indeed do you respond? Now, you should know in general that that type of act is covered by the pasuk in Vayikra Yudches of Lo Sikruvu Legalo Servosa, where the Torah goes out of its way and says there is a parsha of arayos, but you can't even do anything that could potentially lead to violating an Isra Erva. Lo Sikruvu Legalo Servosa. That includes cases of chibuk, nishuk, nigia, even minimal contact as well. Minimal contact as well. There are three shittas in the Rishonim. What exactly does that mean? The Rambam in Hilchos Yisurei Biyah is clear. In Perachaf Aleph, this is an issa daraisa. This is an example of a siyag daraisa. The Torah says, don't do A because of belief to B. Any contact, even physical contact, is covered by Losikru V'Lagalar Servasa. The Rambam seems to have the following important caveat. Only if it's derechila. Only if it's done out of a sense of connection, lust, desire, only then is it considered to be true. It doesn't necessarily mean an emotional connection, that an expression of love, but even desire. As the Stipler points out, Rav Moshe assumes that derechiba is considered to be us. If it's not derechiba, then it is not true. We'll see what that means. The Ramban disagrees. The Ramban is found in Sefer HaMitzvos, and also say Shinun Gimel, where the Ramban writes that those harchakos are only in Issur Drabana. Only in Issur Drabana. Rabbi Yona is the most machmir. Rabbi Yona is found in Shari Tshuva, in Shar Gimel. Rabbi Yona writes it's an Issa Daraisa, even Shalo Kederachiva. Those are the three shitas that you find. The Ramban in Issa Drabanan, Rabbi Yona, everything in Issa Daraisa, and the mid-view of the Rambam. Sometimes, in Issa Daraisa, if it's considered to be Derachiva, then in such a case we're concerned that Lo Sikruvu, Legalos, Ervasa. Those are the three shittas. As a midas chasidus, one should be machmer for the shita of Rabbeinu Yonah, right? Meikar hadin, the Rambam maintains that particular split. Derechiba, is this a daraisa? What about shaloka derechiba? What about shaloka derechiba? Mutter? Under certain circumstances? Or, no, it's not an issa daraisa, but it's still an issa drabana. So the Shach writes in two places in Eredeim, Kufnun Zayin, as well as later in Kuf Tzari Hei, the Shach assumes that according to the Rambam, if it's Shelo Kederechiba, Litzorech, but Shelo Kederechiba, that is not Aser, according to the Rambam. A male doctor, for example, administering treatment to a female patient, Shelo Kederechiba, so in such a case, that's Mutter. That's the Psak of the Shach. And many poskim will indeed rely on that psak of the shach. If it's shelo kederechiba in such a case, then it is considered to be mutter. Rav Moshe assumes this way in Eben Ezer and Chelek Aleph Simen Nun Vav. Rav Moshe just, however, raises a very critical concern. How can you be certain that this is shelo kederechiba? How can you be certain? Now, chiba does not mean that I hope to marry this person. No? Chiba means that there's an element of desire, right? An element of lust. So that's Rav Moshe writes that as a general rule, one should not go ahead and do so. Rav Moshe writes one should avoid shaking hands because of that concern that even according to the Shach, the Shaloka Derechiba is that which is mutter. However, how do you know? How do you know that indeed is the case? There are poskim that disagree. Many have asked Rav Shechter, for example, push comes to shove, faced with a very uncomfortable situation, right, where it already happened, and someone is reaching their hand out to you, that would result in absolute embarrassment not to go ahead and do so, right, the possibility of reliance on the Shach, and to go ahead and to extend your hand, right, assuming that Shaloka Derechiba like the Shach. Rabbi Willig, when he is asked, he often recommends doing what he calls the dead fish shake, and that is just stick out your hand, no pressure at all, no, in any shape or form, just sticking out the hand to be able to do so. So what I would tell you is this, in terms of caveats. Knowing this can happen, try to publicly and politely avoid that confrontation. Try, if you can, to avoid their confrontation. Sometimes a person will be less likely to extend their hand to you if there's some distance between you, if you're beyond hand's reach. If you're standing so close to that person, it's normal for them to do so. If you're somewhat at a distance, sometimes the difference can just mean 6 inches away, they will not go ahead and do so. I would tell you as a rule of thumb, try to position yourself in such a way that it is less natural for someone to extend your hand. I will also tell you, people have done this, and they tell me that it's effective. sometimes when they meet a person for the first time, and that's a concern that they have, they see to it that their hands are full. They're carrying their briefcase. They're carrying their file. In one hand, they have their briefcase, the businessman, on the other hand, they have their file. It's not foolproof, but it's less likely that in those circumstances, a person is going to reach out their hands, seeing that your hands indeed are full. There's a husband and wife team that they meet people together, so who carries the goods? It all depends on the person that they're meeting, right? Whether the husband or the wife is the one who's carrying all of the things. It can help sometimes. In 80% of the cases, it can avoid that type of confrontation. There is a suggestion, it's interesting, I'm not saying, a person always carries a business card with him. Business card with him in his pocket. So when somebody reaches out their hand, they take the business card and hand it to the person's extended hand. People have done this. Not foolproof, but a little, somewhat helpful. But again, push comes to shove, there's a basis lahat. But position yourself. That try to avoid that possibility. Mikra hadin, we pass like that view of the shach, and to save a person from embarrassment, it is considered to be right, an option. I'll tell you two anecdotal episodes. In 1970, Rav Avadia Yosef won the Israel Prize. And the Prime Minister, Golda Meir, was the one who gave the prize. She gave him this prize, and then she stuck out her hand to shake Rav Avadia Yosef's hand. There was no way, in front of all the cameras and that he was going to do so. He refrained from doing so in Eretz Yisrael. It created, as everything does in Eretz Yisrael, like a big tumult of he did it right. But there's no way that he was going to publicly go ahead and do that. Several years later, Rav Mordechai Eliyahu is introduced to the Queen of England. And the Queen of England stuck out a hand to shake his hand. He did not respond. And the Queen of England was just sitting there with all of the cameras. That night, someone came to Mordechai Eliyahu and delivered a letter from the Queen. I'm sure he opened it. He was like, the Queen. I remember debating with someone in England, whether you make a bracha when you see the Queen. Like a melech, a queen is a melech. He says, of course, the queen can have you killed. He thought. Now, like a malchus, the Radvaz writes, you only make a bracha on royalty if they have the koach, the real koach of malchus. So this guy from England, what am I telling you? I was convinced that, of course that's true. Of course that's true. And when Prince Charles got married, there were certain people that went to the chasana. And I remember saying, how did you go to the chasana? I was summoned. So it's treason not to show up at the wedding like that. Yeah, these English, they have a different mindset of what the queen means. He got a letter that was sent by the queen. It was a letter of apology. Because the head of the protocol of the queen informed the queen afterwards that the official protocol is the queen does not extend her hand to her. And Rachel had that letter. Interesting. Sometimes you think of, extreme examples, but you have to know the climate very well. You should not lose your position because of that. I always tell my Balabatim the following. Whenever you're dealing with workers that you interact with on a regular basis, you're seeing this person then everything has to be absolutely clear. You can't go in and, shake their hand every day. You can't have a situation where when a deal is done, all of a sudden they're gonna embrace you. Right? There was a story of Rav and Rebbetzin Shlichim that they followed all these eitzes. Now they came in with their hands full. No? And the person saw the woman, her hands full, he can't shake her hand. So he gave her this huge hug. you have to use safe. Push comes to shove, there's a basis. But try to distance. You've all heard of the Talmud of the Ramah. The Levush, no? Levush wrote 10 Svarim, Levush Malchus. Right? If you look in the introduction to the Sefer, it says that he wrote this Svarim and he named Levush Malchus based on the Pasuk because his name was Mordechai. No? Mordechai Yatza. And the Pasuk continues, Levush Malchus. He wrote this Svarim, Levush Malchus. That's what he writes in the introduction. So take a look at the Chafetz Chaim. The Chafetz Chaim has a small Sefer. It's called Machne Yisrael, Perek Yutes. So he writes that the Levush is a Talmud of the Ramah. Now, Levush is famous. Now, Talmud of the Ramah. The Levush wrote so much about Minhag Ashkenaz because the Ramah just wrote Piskei Dinim, a little bit more in Darkei Moshe. But the Levush wanted to elaborate. It's classic. Now, the Levush once had a meeting with a particular group, And he got to the meeting, and it was just a woman that was there. It was just a woman that was there. It was like him and this woman, no? And he looked around, and this woman like kind of planned this. All the doors were locked. He had no way out. There was a Levush with this woman. Levush lived in the middle of the 1500s. There was only one escape. The escape route was the sewer drain. No, because you know they had bathrooms, they had outhouses. He climbed through the sewer drain. In order to make it outside. He came out. He was intact, but his clothing was, you can imagine, no? His clothing was absolutely foul. No? Chafetz Chaim writes, that's why he's known as Levush. That's why the Sefer is named Levush Malchus. Chafetz Chaim writes. And Luzoch at that, Sehat Tishmon. Something which is profound. One has to recognize that we're not the first to find ourselves in these cases of nisyonos, but one has to recognize that the halacha equips us for that sense of appropriate hishtaglus. You know, during this time of year, just 2 minutes, that holiday gift giving is something which is very, very common. Right, holiday gift giving is an interesting halachic issue. There is a Gemara of Avodah Zarah and Daf Chaf that discusses lo sichanim, one is not allowed to give a matnas chinam to non-Jews in Isser lo sichanim. There we assume halacha that if it's done for a reasonable purpose of self-interest, I am giving this gift because it's important for my professional standing that we have a cordial relationship. So in such a case, that's not part of lo sichanim. A person goes ahead and gets a haircut, he's going to tip the barber because he doesn't want to get a wedge next month. He wants to get a good haircut then as well. That's not called lo sichanim. Even if he never sees this barber again. But giving him a tip for a job well done also is not considered to be matnas chinam. Matnas chinam in Chazal, but Azar Daf Chaf means that one is doing so for the express purpose of establishing a friendship, establishing a relationship, and that's called Yeraday and Simin Kufnun Aleph. The very opening sugyas of Avodah Zarah, though, that has a more specific problem, and that is around the holiday times of giving gifts or even doing business with a non-Jew. The fear, either because of harvacha or because of lifnei ivim. Harvacha means that as a result of this business deal, they are going to thank their deity. And therefore, what do you mean? Lo sazkiru al picha. You cannot do anything to cause someone to evoke a shame of avodah zarah. Or the Gemara has, that's the sugya of lifnei iver. I'm going to go ahead and sell an animal to a guy, and he's going to use it for his ritual purposes. He'll use it the shame of avodah zarah. And that's my iser daraisa of lifnei iver lo Sitei Mirshal. So you can take a look at the Rishonim and Avodah Zarah, even on Dav Beis, Rabbeinu Tam and Tosis, the Ritva and Davav, about how that plays out Bizman Hazeh. But gift giving is an important issue. The questions certainly should be posed. The Ramah writes, as someone came over to me with a shah that they thought was absolutely mutter, you have non-Jewish workers. Can you give them non-Jewish food? Non-kosher food? The Rama writes that, of course, that's aser, kuf yud zayin. You're not allowed to do business with machalos aseros. You're not allowed to do business with things that are trade. Even though it's not aser b'ana, but it cannot be a source of business, A couple of the guys in the yeshiva were trying to, what do they call it when you get together before a football game, during halftime, and after the football game? Tailgating. So they were trying to start a business of tailgating. So we're working out a lot of the details in terms of the issue of machalos asuros. Because you cannot do business in machalos asuros. The Ramah writes that even means that if you have non-Jewish workers, you cannot go ahead and feed them the machalos asuros. If that's part of, the only thing you can do is following something which is ba'akra. You're a shofet. And you do a ma'aseh shechita. And it turns out that animal is a trefa. So that incidental occurrence, that was not planned, but something that is incidental. You're a herdsman, and an animal drops dead. So in such a case, that you can go ahead and sell intermittently, ba'akroi, that you can sell to a goy. You cannot do business with machalas aseros, nor can you go ahead and provide. So it's important that Even if a person will give a gift, it should be done in a way that is not a gift that is given, right, in honor of their holiday. Sometimes at the very end of the year, it's appropriate to go ahead and have a gift. I usually recommend to my balabatim, do it in advance. Do it afterwards. Don't do it exactly at the time, the last week in December, which they'll be associated with a particular holiday. Make sure that it is something that is kosher, that you are giving even to your non-Jewish workers. Some of them will give gift certificates. I'll tell them, if it's a gift certificate to Costco, that's great. If it's a gift certificate to a non-kosher restaurant, not to do that. That also, Poshub Shat included in that, Ramon Kuf Yud Zayin, of not to be the facilitator. That's called doing business with Machalos Asuros, even though for them it's considered to be legitimate. Rabbi Kivega writes the following, that what about like re-gifting? Now, you know, that we have a big kehillah now, so I get a lot of shalach manas. Some are fresh, right? A lot are not. A lot are like, you know, the wines that have been making the circles for a very, very long time. And you get it, and you get an end, and, you know, surprising, sometimes people don't take off the label, the one who gave it to them. But re-giftings, Rabbi Kivega writes a chiddush. You're not allowed to go ahead and to, yeah, you know, go to the restaurant, I'll pay the tab. But re-gifting, Rabbi Kivega writes, is allowed. If someone were to go ahead and give you, right, something that's not kosher, you can pass that on to a non-Jewish worker or a non-Jewish individual. That's not called a business element of machalos asuros. That's like a shochet where an animal happened to be a treifa. But that's only machalos asuros that are mutar bahana. What about wine? This is very common. I just had the shaila a couple of days ago. One of my balabatim was given a very expensive bottle of wine, clear stamyanim, right? Obviously not kosher, obviously not going to use it. Can he pass it on? Mikar hadin, we assume that stamyanim is aser bahana. But there is Rama in Kufchav Gimel that writes, behefsid meruba. The Rama's case is an interesting one, that a non-Jew owed a significant amount of money to a Jew, and all of a sudden he comes to pay back the chov, with shava kesef. No, arsa gift. No, with shava kesef. Right? Baba kama davav. No? Yayin. Right? Stamyin. That was the shava kesef. No? He said, this is what I have now. The Rama writes, if it's a hefsid meruba, one is allowed to go ahead and to receive it. If not, the Rama says, one should not go ahead and do so. This individual that asked me this year, was a single bottle of wine. I told them, that really is not hefsid meruba. Right, I told him that he should not pass that bottle on to anyone else, not give it on to a non-Jew. Last year, some of you come to my home and say there are some good bottles of wine that are there. When Dr. Kadish gave his Gnevis Dashir, and remember what he was talking about? And I was talking about the Magnum Rothschild, that's what we surround for him now, to the guys who make a seal. So this guy was given a case of wine. Those were thousands of dollars in a case of wine. Right, it was unusual. Every bottle was about $300, right? And he was given an entire case. Right, it was $3,600 worth of wine. So I told him that, you know, the Rama says Bepsid Maruba, one is allowed to go ahead and to work with that. So he went back to a wine store. They were glad to take that. It was very unusual wine. They took it and they gave him, you know, $3,200 worth of credit in the store to be able to do what he did. And that's what the Rama writes in cases of Stam Yenin. But one interesting has to be careful regarding those particular issues. I think we're running a little bit late. Now, Rosh Hashanah, maybe next semester, maybe we'll have a chance. Even those of you already taking these, who took the class already, maybe to get together, we can work through. If you want, even going through some makoros inside to be able to, the halacha is like, incredibly rich. The dynamic of halacha is unparalleled. It's unparalleled. Right? It's like no one should think that the halacha, in any shape or form, is something that's stagnant, doesn't speak to you in your workplace. It speaks to you, and it will give you clear, clear answers. If it's appropriate, that's responsible hishtablos. And if it's inappropriate, it's a false start. It's a false start. It's not going to be your key to success, right? Trying to outmaneuver, right, the parameters of what it means to be a ben Torah in today's society. But it requires significant knowledge. It requires that you have to have a Rav who really knows the halachos very, very well. And it requires a tremendous sense of emunah bitachon, to certainly believe that if it's right, it's appropriate, and ultimately that will be your secret to hatzlach. Okay.